Did you know there's an online cannabis company that ships federally legal THC right to your door? And they found a way to combine THC with carefully selected functional ingredients to target nearly every mood and health concern that you can think of. I'm talking about Mood.com's incredible line of functional gummies. And you can get 20% off your first order at Mood.com with promo code BROS. Forget the one-size-fits-all supplements that you can only get high on. We're done with that, all right? Mood's functional gummies are optimized to kick in as little as 15 minutes and take you to the mood that you're looking for, whether that's the Mind Magic gummies for deep work and creativity, or the PMS support to ease cramps and balance mood swings, or their sexual euphoria gummies to help you feel ready for action and turn every touch into a full body experience. Listen, you can find gummies to just get you high pretty much anywhere these days, but Mood's functional gummies combine premium, federally legal THC with targeted botanicals to help you get to that perfect mood, usually in as little as 15 minutes. And everything ships discreetly right to your door. No dispensary lines, no awkward conversations, just better days and nights delivered to your doorstep. Best of all, not only is every Mood product backed by a 100-day satisfaction guarantee, as I mentioned, listeners get 20% off their first order with the code BROS. So head to Mood.com, find the functional gummy that matches exactly what you're looking for, and let Mood help you discover your perfect mood. And don't forget to use the promo code BROS when you check out to save 20% on your first order.
This isn't just a game, it's a once-in-a-generation event. The Harlem Globetrotters 100-year tour. Celebrate 100 years of high-flying dunks, 100 years of show-stopping moves, and 100 years of changing the game. Bring the whole family and be part of the legacy. This game is once in a century. Be there at Schottenstein Center on December 27th. Go to HarlemGlobetrotters.com for your tickets to the 100-year tour.
Welcome to Drinking Bros, presented by GhostBed.com. Sit back, relax, and grab a fucking drink.
Stop shuffling through life like a zombie. You're bumming everybody out. Grab a CardoMax Energy Intensifier and wake up. Owned and operated by former Navy SEAL Sean Matson, CardoMax's Energy Intensifier will help you power through your workouts and dead afternoons with vitamins B3, B6, B12, caffeine, and BCAAs. Use the promo code DB to get 30% off your next four orders at CardoMax.com. That's CardoMax.com, helping you achieve your max. Welcome to Drinking Bros Podcast, kids. D'Anthony, we got a fascinating guest on today. We got Ami Horowitz on the show today. Be the first time I ever got a guest name right, I think.
Yeah.
You think so?
Yeah. It's
we'll ask him.
That's pretty good.
We'll ask him. There we go. Ami, how did I do? How did I do today?
That's pretty good.
The pressure's on because it's technically anti-Semitic if you pronounce a Jewish person's name incorrectly.
It really is, yeah. And I don't want that heat, Ami. Yeah. I don't.
You don't need that.
Oh yeah.
It just so happens that one of my best friend's name is Ami, so it's pretty easy.
I mean, if you said it any other way, you would have been canceled.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, exactly. If I would have called you Amy, for example, then we would have had some issues. You got your Johnny Cash shirt on today. I'm a big fan. Lately, you've been in the news here for the Iron Dome in Israel's and the funding of it specifically through one of these bills that AOC has called a crass political maneuver on. I'm just guessing with your last name that you're Jewish.
That would be a very strong assumption.
Good. And it would be.
I think you're in a safe zone with that one.
I hope so. You never know these days. You never know. But with that being said, I would imagine that this has a certain level of importance to you in the protection of Israel and everything else that's going on. Or you just hate AOC. Which one is it?
I don't know which one I feel stronger about because they're pretty close to even, to be honest. The entire squad has revealed themselves time and time again as anti-Semites, right? And what they try to do is they try to say, well, we don't hate Jews. We hate Israel. We hate the one Jewish state in the world, but we don't hate Jews. Now, by the way, that would hold some water if they would stand up and they would attack, I don't know, China or Iran or North Korea. And if they hated all quote unquote bad actors, then okay, I can give them a pass. But when they focus on the one Jewish state, guys, that's when I say, maybe you might be an anti-Semite.
And is that your honest belief? Because look, there's a lot of hyperbole in saying things like that. Like, is that your honest belief that you think that they are? Or do you think it's just the funding that they have an issue with that is in this specific bill?
No, I think they are. And let's, we can even move away from Israel. Anybody can criticize Israel. I do it. You can. There's no problem. You criticize any country for its policies. But there comes a certain level of criticism where you start crossing. Like you can criticize America and not be anti-American, but at a certain point, you start to delve into anti-Americanism. If you want to go in the anti-Semitism, the growth in anti-Semitism comes from the left, not from the right. Anti-Semitism exists on the right. It always has. You know, it's funny. When I was a kid growing up in Los Angeles, my school was often, and my synagogue was often vandalized by neo-Nazis who would scrawl anti-Semitic, you know, sayings in or break our windows and break the school or attack us every couple times a year. A couple times a year it would happen. And that was exclusively the domain of skinheads and the right. What happened was we then entered this Goldilocks period where probably around the early 90s, late 80s, but really the early 90s, where anti-Semitism really kind of stopped and you didn't see it on synagogues or schools or Jewish attacks. It kind of went away for the most part. And that really was the case for maybe 20 years. And what's happened is we've seen a resurgence of anti-Semitism, but it's morphed into something different. And like I said, the anti-Semites on the right exist, but they are a very small proportion of people in this country. It's the anti-Semitism on the left, which most people like me are concerned about, and the Rashida Tlaibs and the Ilhan Omars, and to some extent, the AOCs represent that.
Yeah, you know, when you see it, because you hate to say it about everybody, right? Because then you seem like that guy.
And it's not. It's not about everybody, right? This is not. Look, there's more anti-Semitic attacks on Jews than Black people, gay people, and Islamic people per capita combined. Does that make this country anti-Semitic? Absolutely, completely not. This is the best place in the history of the world for Jews to live in. So no, it's not. It's a very small proportion of the population, but it's a growing percentage of a very strong percentage of this country. In other words, the hard left.
Right.
They are gaining power. They are gaining influence, and I think they are rife with anti-Semitism.
Well, yeah, it's different, right? So the anti-Semitism from the right comes in the form of like slurs and vandalism, and anti-Semitism from the left comes in the form of like large-scale financial subjugation in a lot of ways. You know what I mean? It's just two different kinds of bullshit, and that's how it works with a lot of stuff these days. The right, the complaints about the right usually have to do with them hurting people's feelings, right? Or there being some potential for violence. But let's be real, 10,000 white supremacists in the U.S. out of 350 million people, that's not a bad ratio, to be honest. I mean, 10,000 being like in organized groups that we know of.
Aren't we white supremacists? I'm told every day that we are all white supremacists.
Jews are now white people. I think one of the squad said that a couple months ago, right?
Yeah. Yeah,
and
tell my mom that who grew up in Iran, who was born in Iran, whether she's a white person or not.
Correct. Well, I mean, technically, Iranians are Persian, which is Caucasian. So, I mean, technically, I'm just saying.
Yeah,
is that true?
Yeah, you're a cracker. So moving along. No, but I worry far less about these like hillbillies that are openly anti-Semitic for no apparent reason than I do about any kind of authoritarianism from the like institution level. And that's what you see from the left typically. They're a little bit better organized and a little better at crafting language. You know what I mean? That's what worries me.
You're absolutely right. Now, by the way, I will add that the slurs, the verbal attacks, and the graffiti by the way, is not just the domain of the right anymore. It's absolutely been taken over, or not taken over, but the left has participated as fully in that kind of behavior and activity as the right. If you go on college campuses, the slurs and the graffiti and the attacks you see on college campuses are all from the left, not from the right.
Right.
And Ami, I want to just chime in here. I know Wikipedia is not right all of the time. It currently has you listed as a member of the Democratic Party. Is that correct?
So Wikipedia is often wrong.
Yes.
Particularly with me.
Yep.
They happen to be right on that one because what happened was about, so during the last election cycle, the Democratic Party, the DNC, announced what it would take to get in the Democratic Party debate stage.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought to myself, it was like 60,000 individual donations. Mm-hmm. I thought to myself, oh, I could do that. So I actually switched my party affiliation to Democrat, and I officially ran for president for the Democratic, or the nomination for the Democratic Party, culminating in, now, so I did get those individual donations. I reached that threshold. And then what the DNC did was they changed, when they realized that I was getting a lot of press, they realized I was going to qualify. They then changed the qualification to actually poll at 1% in addition to that number, which obviously I wasn't going to be able to do. So yeah, it was actually a really fascinating 3-4 months. And I never changed my party affiliation back to Republican. Actually, it was never Republican. It was always independent.
That's funny. So would you say that change happened because of you? Because you and I covered the election, you know, ad nauseum here. And
well, I think it was actually Tulsi Gabbard that really forced the change, but I'm sure he had something to do with it. They didn't want anybody that had any kind of social media reach could get 60,000 individual donors pretty easily, to be honest. Yeah, I mean, you could run advertising.
Well, Tulsi was polling at 1%, so she would have qualified. She did qualify. I was the only one who wasn't polling.
Right. Well, before the first debate, the one where she absolutely wiped the floor with Kamala Harris, she was short of the new threat. They kept bumping up the threshold for individual donors long after you were out of the race. I think it was like, what was that? May or June of 2020, something like that.
Yeah,
I don't remember exactly when it was, but it was around that time. And I think at that time it was like 100,000 individual donors and one or 1.5% in the polls.
Yeah, I think that was the second or the third day. They which I was never going to get. But yeah, one of the coolest things I did was I was the keynote speaker to the National Urban League Conference, the largest Black organization in the country, and the people on stage that day with me was Pete Buttigieg, Kamala Harris, and Joe Biden.
Really?
Yeah. And we're all in the green room together. It was very, very uncomfortable.
What was the conversation like for that?
That was before Biden told everybody they weren't Black, right?
Yeah, I think so, right?
That was right. That was very close before it. Yeah.
Yeah.
It was not that far before.
That was in September. Right?
Something like
that. Yeah, anyway.
It was a really cool experience. The speech was carried on CNN Live. I mean, it was an amazing experience.
Did you get a chance to chat with them at all? Because here's what I'm curious about. I mean, look, again, we covered the election ad nauseum here. And the one thing that I was always, I guess, the most curious about it, what it is like behind the scenes in the green room, like if they separated people, if you have your own, you know, kind of makeup room trailer, that type of stuff. Or is it just like, all right, here's a conference room and you're all hanging out around this table. And then do you chat with one another about what's going on and are they genuinely friendly?
So there were four of us that day and they were kind of, you know, so you spoke for I think 20 minutes and then you had like a 10-minute Q&A. So when somebody was on stage, the three of us were in that green room. And no, they would not chat with me. I tried to engage a conversation and they would ignore me.
But just straight up like stonewall, hey, we're not doing
anything.
Well,
Biden didn't.
Like,
Biden had no idea where he was.
No, he still doesn't, still.
You can excuse that one. And Kamala can only cackle so many times in an afternoon.
Yeah. Yeah, but you would still be like, all right, cool, man. Even though, you know, you hate somebody or whatever, one would think they would at least engage in some form of conversation.
Mm. One would be wrong.
That's interesting, man. I didn't know that.
Well, not to be clear, not a conversation with me. They were in conversation with each other.
Sure, sure. And they it's like fourth grade lunch. It's just you go to the other table. We're good. We're not talking to you, dummy.
That's pretty funny.
That is funny.
One is unlike the other.
Yeah.
So let's talk. I don't think a lot of our fans really know the history of Israel as a country since 1948. And I think we should go through some of that, because one thing I hear a lot is why do we keep spending money on Israel? It's about $3.5-4 billion a year.
Yeah, and both sides have questioned why finance someone else's defense.
Right. Well, I mean, we've been financing Pakistan's defense for the last 50 years too. So let's not pretend like this is just a fucking American and Israel situation. We fund a lot of people's defenses. That I'm not. And $3 billion to Israel is not really even that much money, to be honest. But I'm curious. Let's go back through some of the stuff that happened so people have a little bit of historical context on this. So 48, right? At first it was the League of Nations at the time, right? It wasn't the UN yet.
No, it was the UN.
Okay. So when was the League of Nations?
That was pre-World War II.
Okay, cool. So correct. 48, UN is the US and the UK basically decide that that's going to be a new settlement, right? But it was, a lot of people think, oh, you displaced all the Palestinians. First of all, Palestine wasn't even a country. It was that was like something Transjordan, I believe, was the name of that area.
I mean, at a certain point, there's a lot of things before that. But
yeah.
So that with the history, with the real quick down dirty is, at the time, the English were in possession and in control of the Palestinian Mandate, that's what they call it then, right? So the Palestinian area. And the Jews were agitating for a long time to create the Jewish state that was there for thousands of years, for a couple thousand years. And then after the Roman destruction of the state of Israel, didn't exist for another almost 2,000 years. And there was they put a lot of political pressure on the British and a lot over a generation. At a certain point, the British just wanted to get the hell out, and they're like, look, here's what we're going to do. There's a Jewish population there. There is an Arab population there. What we're going to do is we're going to split the country essentially in two, right? There's going to be a Jewish state and there's going to be an Arab state in what we now know as modern day Israel. Mm. Everything west of the Jordan River, everything what was east of it became the Kingdom of Jordan. Mm. And what happened was the Jews said, great, we'd love it. And the Arabs said, we reject it. And when the day came where the British pulled out and the two states were created, that day, all of the Arab armies in the entire vicinity attacked this very small Jewish state. And miraculously, some will say, so would I, the Jews were able to win the war, and they were able to conquer a little more territory. Not what we had, not where they are today, but a little more than they had. And over the course of the next three decades, a number of wars ensued. They were all wars of aggression by the Arab nations against Israel, because the saying was, we're going to throw Israel into the sea. That was their mantra for generations. And they kept losing. And every time they lost, in 67, and after the 67 war, Israel took essentially what Israel looks like now. Right, they took the West Bank, and they took the Golan Heights, and then they also took Sinai, which was given back to the Egyptians after a peace accord. One of the great fallacies of the way people look at Israel is that Israel's not willing to trade land for peace. They've done it numerous times, and they've shown they're willing to do it if a true peace is available to them. So that's really kind of the down and dirty of the history of the country. In regards to the question about funding, right, it's an interesting one. You know, and it's a larger debate about whether or not we should be funding countries at all outside the United States. It's a fair debate to have.
Yep.
Look, my feeling is it is ultimately a very small, small, small percentage of our budget. And there are countries that could use it and need it, and I think it helps them. I happen to think Israel is not necessarily one of those countries at this point. It was in the 50s and 60s, maybe even the 70s. Not so now. But the vast majority of the funding Israel gets is military. And the vast majority of that are really, first of all, Israel, I think 80% of all that money has to be spent to buy weapons in the U.S. So you really would really more like a subsidy for U.S. For U.S. Weapons manufacturers.
Wait, I'm sorry. So you're telling me that politicians in the United States essentially rigged the system where their buddies at Lockheed Martin and Boeing would get paid? Don't believe you.
There's no way.
This.
Yeah, I know. It's shocking to hear.
Imagine a former defense secretary writing a resignation letter with 700 other assholes, and then getting a fucking consulting job with one of the biggest defense contractors on earth.
That's how it works.
Like a month later.
Yeah.
Sweet.
That's how it works.
Chaos, buddy.
All you gotta do is just scratch the surface, my man.
Yeah.
Just scratch the surface.
It's always about money and power with these assholes. But I think you're probably right about Israel probably doesn't need our money at this point. And it's I listened to all these arguments about it. Now, you say they've been willing to trade territory for peace. They've also pushed, and not so much recently, but they pushed with these new settlements into, I don't know what you would even call that, neutral territory, maybe, against the advice of a lot of other places. I mean, I understand it. It's that if we're going to rest in America on the manifest destiny idea, if somebody's been trying to attack you for that long and your response is it's create more settlements, that's not really, you can't call that unethical necessarily. Now, the blockades, the sea blockade and the ground borders and stuff like that, and some of the way the Palestinians are treated, it's important for us to remember, especially in 2021, as small as the world has become, that a people are not their government. But then you have to look back, what, 15 years ago, the Palestinian people elected Hamas to run their fucking government. So you have to bear some responsibility for some of this shit at some point. I think this is one of the most fucked up conversations that's happened in the last 60 years, 70 years, because people don't, it's, I can see a lot of fucking good points, but ultimately it comes down to culture, right? Does your culture support terrorism or not? And up until the mid 2010s, because I did plenty of research on this in grad school, something like 43 to 45% of Palestine supported like suicide terrorism. You know what I mean? So at some point, you've got to take some responsibility for this shit, right?
Yeah, the number is actually higher than that. And still, by the way, it's still about that high. You know, well, you brought up a lot of interesting points. And I do want to address a couple of them. And the first is this. So the blockade is only in Gaza. It's not the Palestinian territories, the West Bank. And it's kind of a misnomer to say blockade. I mean, Israel actually transfers a tremendous amount of equipment, food, and medicine to the Palestinians. But also, remember, Israel only has one border with them. They have an entire other border south. Israel has zero control. There's no blockade, right? Israel just has a border with a hostile nation, just like we do here with any country has with a hostile nation, as India has with Pakistan. And they have to treat it as a hostile enemy because it's exactly what they are. Yet, despite the fact that these people continue to send suicide bombers from the south into Israel, you know, balloons that create forest fires in Israel, Israel continues to give them aid and support.
Right.
I think most countries in the world would just say, you know what, go fuck yourselves. We're done.
Yeah, probably. But you have to imagine what that's like to a young Palestinian person, where the only resources they get are from their sworn enemy that has them surrounded, at least from their perspective, has them surrounded, right? I mean, that's not exactly... That's how you, if Israel and Arab nations typically fight long wars, and when I say that, I don't mean that they go into hot wars, active combat for decades at a time. What I mean is they're not looking at a solution 3 years from now or 10 years from now. They're looking at 100, 200, 1,000 years from now, right? It's
a long game.
The cultures are so old, they're used to thinking in those terms. So I think for the West, it's hard to imagine that all of this is in some ways gamesmanship almost. You know, we fuck with you a little bit, you fuck with us, and, you know, we shake up the snow globe, and when it settles, we look and see where all the snow is, and we shake it up again. It kind of works like that off and on in this place. And I don't know if there's ever going to be any kind of real, like, solution to any of this, but I would say that it does seem like a good idea for the West and Israel to try to figure out a way to quell some of this horse shit. And I don't know how you do it, to be honest. I mean, it's obviously you can't go punch somebody into submission that's willing to fight for 1,000 years. It just doesn't work that way, unless you're willing to annihilate everybody off the face of the earth, in which case we should have just blown up Afghanistan in 2001. But that's not gonna happen.
Most people really aren't thinking that. Yeah, the truth is most people aren't thinking that long term. You know, I know they're both old cultures, but they're not thinking 100, 200 years ahead in advance. They're thinking next year, the year after that, to be honest. They're not China in that way. Look, the truth is, if you look at kind of where Israel and the Palestinians are relative to where they were 20 years ago, what happened, the solution was Israel was having attacks, you know, about in the 90s, was having devastating suicide attacks almost on a weekly basis. They're blowing up buses and cafes. Mm. I mean, you're talking about killing thousands of civilians. Remember, the difference is when the U.S. or Israel kills a civilian, they're never the target. They are collateral damage. When Hamas or the Palestinian Authority or Islamic Jihad, when they engage in, you know, an attack, they are targeting civilians. There's a massive difference, to make that clear.
Yeah, for sure.
But what happened was Israel solved the problem by building the wall or the security border, right? Actually, 90% of it is not a wall, but a security fence.
Right.
And that security fence stopped cold the suicide attack. Right. So there's a lesson to be learned in the United States about how a secure border can actually be helpful in your ultimate goals. And that changed the dynamic of what was going on because Israel didn't have to deal such a heavy hand in the territories because the suicide bombings ceased. Right. Which also goes to show that once one side stops the attacks, Israel stops what it has to do. It's not a cycle of violence, not actually really true. And so the relationship between the Palestinian Authority, and I don't get too much in the weeds, stop me if I am.
No, we like
but
it.
The relationship with the relationship with the Palestinian Authority in Israel is actually pretty good.
It has been for a long time.
Yeah, and for a long time. And I, as somebody who spends a lot of time in very bad places, and I actually count on if something goes down, like you know, things go tits up, yeah, I actually would like to think, I think the Palestinian Authority would come give me a hand and help me out.
Well, look, they don't want the press from particularly a notable Jewish person getting fucked up in their AO. That's just not good news for them in any way.
Am I a notable Jewish person?
I would say so. If you can Google somebody and they're the first person that comes up.
Yeah.
I mean, you've been on a debate or a platform stage with the president and the vice president. That's probably notable.
Yeah. That's good enough for a nice Wikipedia because getting a Wikipedia is hard.
I'm most proud of the fact that I was listed as a notable alumni at USC. I actually took that.
Oh, wow. It's you and OJ, right?
Well, that's a hard one. There's a bunch there. USC is mostly Spielberg.
Mostly
all
him.
Those guys.
It's mostly him and OJ. Let's be real.
Well, OJ was the greatest running back there.
I think that Israel and the Jews, the royal Jews, I guess if you want to use it that way, in the Arab world is almost akin to gun control and abortion in America. You know what I mean? It is something that, by and large, does not affect the citizens of that country for the most part. Like, very few people come into contact with some kind of illegal gun use or an abortion. The rates of both are very low, but they're single voter issue topics all the time. And it is a lot easier to weaponize hate than it is to weaponize hope, especially if you're a fucking dictator.
You're right. It's a great point, because day to day, the Palestinians don't deal with Israelis, and day to day, the Israelis don't deal with Palestinians. You know, one of the great lies. And I did a couple of videos that kind of put those lies to bed, is that there's this idea that you can't travel in the Palestinian territories from one state to the next without going through checkpoints. Total horseshit. It's absolutely complete lie. I, at one point, to prove the point, I rented a Palestinian car with a Palestinian driver, and we drove for about 7 hours, crisscrossing back and forth all across the West Bank, and were never stopped once. We never came across an Israeli soldier the entire time. So it's actually a significant lie. A lot of these lies are what leads to the problems that we're having, and they're obstacles to peace because people believe the lies and take a position that doesn't exist, that being one of them.
Yeah, and it's I think that's the Iron Dome is America's actually spent quite a bit of money on this over the years, but I think the technology that we've gleaned from it, it's like somebody was complaining about space travel last week. I don't remember who it was. Some idiot in Congress.
And it was actually here. Yeti was.
Oh yeah, it was Yeti. Yeti has a billboard here in town that says, "Stop sending people to space. We got better stuff to do."
Stop spending billions.
This phone right here, the GPS that's on it. Half of the tech in this room right now is because of the United States space program.
Yeah.
Just figuring shit out how to do it up there. That's fucking stupid. So how do you minimize that? USC is a great poli sci school, right? That's probably one of their better programs. So
film school too.
Film school,
one of the
of
top,
course, yeah,
one of the top ones
for sure. But I think their poli sci program has produced quite a few very smart people, and I wonder if how much attention is being given to taking the sting out of that or maybe educating people a little bit more about how this is all going, because the average person in Iran, for example, probably doesn't know as much as they should about the history of this issue, or about how, like what you're saying, dispelling these rumors and shit like that. I don't know. It's almost
they don't know jack shit.
Yeah,
because all they hear, this is not right. We're not talking about America here. We're talking about closed societies that have very limited access to media. The media is controlled. They're fed this bullshit. And you're right. They don't know, and it's an important point. And by the way, Iron Dome is both. It's a co-investment. Israel and the U.S. both co-invest. And in fact, a lot of it, the U.S. military uses Israel for the almost like an R&D arm.
Yep.
A lot of the R&D that we get ultimately here in the U.S. comes from co-investment in things like Iron Dome with Israel.
I mean, we got some sponsors that put this show on the air, so if you'll indulge me, I'm going to read those right now. Not that you have a choice. First and foremost, GhostBed.com/drinking bros. Sleep so good, it's scary. They got a 35% off sale now. They bumped it up 5% for the ghosts for Halloween. Again, take advantage of them. I think they did finally take down the 40% off, though. And it was, you know, usually it's 30% on the show with the promo code Drinking Bros at checkout. And it still is. If you want a singular item, congratulations, do that. But right now there is a flash ghost sale for Halloween of 35% off at ghostbed.com/drinking bros. So if you need pillows, sheets, a mattress, an adjustable base, whatever you can possibly fathom that your bedroom needs, that's what they got there. And they've got the best in the biz. Go to ghostbed.com/drinking bros today. Or as always, they got a 36-month pay-as-you-go program. No interest there if you have decent credits. And they'll allow you to use those deals, the 30% off, the 35% off deals with that program. And it's $35-$38 a month at the end of it, dude, when you check out. Boom. Congratulations. 36 months. No interest. Go. Get yourself a mattress. Be a real human being. Next up. We've got GetRoman.com/drinking bros. Right now, you're going to get $15 off your first month. If you got problems in the bedroom, fix them. You can fix them at GetRoman.com/drinking bros. You know, it's one of those things where, you know, you got squeaky doors, clogged sinks, or finicky engines. When things break around the house, you take care of it. However, when something's off in the bedroom, you just try not to think about it. Your lady doesn't, okay? Come on, man. What are you waiting for? Take care of it. Go to GetRoman.com/drinking bros now. With Roman, you can get a free online evaluation and ongoing care for ED, all from the comfort and privacy of your home. A U.S.-licensed healthcare professional will work with you to find the best treatment plan. If medication is appropriate, it ships to you for free with two-day shipping. The whole process is straightforward and discreet. Getting started is simple. Just go to GetRoman.com/drinking bros and complete an online visit. Take care of your ED without leaving your home. Complete an online visit today to connect with a healthcare professional and take care of it. Go to GetRoman.com/drinking bros now, and you'll get $15 off your first month. It's really time you take care of your ED. And remember, getting started today will save you $15 on your first order of ED treatment. Last but not least here today, kids, we've got boxofawesome.com. Promo code Drinking Bros gets you 20% off your first monthly box when you sign up at boxofawesome.com and use the promo code Drinking Bros at checkout. Look, I've been on this tip for close to 2 years with boxofawesome.com. Huge fan. It's a box of all the coolest things you need as a dude in this life that you will not buy for yourself. It's better than like Brookstone, right? They got everything there. They got shit. I got a hatchet one time in the mail. I've gotten a dop kit. I've gotten a travel bag. I've gotten a tortilla set for like Mexican food. I've gotten a whole bar set from them. I mean, you name it. It's just cool stuff for guys that you would never get for yourself. It's only like $45 a month. And your wife is getting the makeup and whatever her bullshit is out there. When it's like, dude, where's your little treat for the month? Huh? Who's gonna knock on your door and just give you a little treat for the month? Boxofawesome.com will. And since it's fall now, we just entered into the fall, they've got everything to go with it, dude. From autumn craft beers to cozy threads and camping gear essentials, Box of Awesome has collections for every part of your life. To get started, take the quiz at boxofawesome.com. This is what I did. It tells you what kind of dude you are in this life, and then they'll pair up the boxes appropriately with you, which is great. Because once you have the answers, then they're going to pick it out, and then Box of Awesome is going to ship it up to you. Ship it up and out to you. They release new boxes every month across a ton of different categories. It's free to sign up, and you can skip a month or cancel anytime. Like I said, each box costs around $45, but it's got well over like $70 worth of stuff inside. More than that, probably. Plus, with each Box of Awesome, you're supporting small businesses. 90% of everything that comes in your Box of Awesome is from a small, up-and-coming brand. Get 20% off your first monthly box when you sign up at boxofawesome.com and enter the code DRINKINBROS at checkout. That's boxofawesome.com, code DRINKINBROS for 20% off your first box at boxofawesome.com. Promo code DRINKINBROS. 20% off.
Yeah, the tech that got developed in the Iron Dome eventually replaced what were our Patriot missile crews from the early 80s and 90s, right? Mm-hmm. Remember that during the Gulf War?
Yeah.
The Scuds were being shot and the Patriot would shoot them down, although we never really got any confirmation that one got shot down.
Right.
But the tech that was developed came from the Iron Dome. So that kind of stuff is cool. I mean, that's how you do this kind of work. I just wonder, I don't think the Israeli and American governments have done a very good job about taking the misinformation out of this debate. Like, they've accepted the misinformation as a counter talking point, but you can't. That's not how that works. Like, when people in the squad say fucking this and that about Palestine, like, no, this is demonstrably untrue, and here's why. You know what I mean? And we don't do we don't do much of that. It's usually it just devolves into a fucking argument about it.
Yeah, and the other odd thing about this is celebrities felt the need to choose a side as things were heating up on this issue. Now, outside of Gal Gadot, who was actually in, you know, the Israeli army, I don't understand why celebrities decided to get involved in this. You're still in Los Angeles right now. What was your take on that as well? Because, look, when celebrities start getting behind issues, that also creates a false narrative because, you know, they have so much influence on social media and you start to believe some of these things that your favorite celebrities are saying. I don't. Dan and I aren't one of those, but a lot of people are. Why did everybody want to get involved in this?
You're talking about the conflict in Israel and the Palestinians?
Correct.
Oh, I mean, it's pretty easy. First of all, celebrities are dumb as shit. And second of all, the glitterati, right? The celebrity culture in the U.S. is a wholly owned subsidiary of the left, right? So they buy the narrative that the left sells. Simple as that. They don't do any independent thinking, right? God forbid they would actually do some research. They're in this echo chamber of leftist ideals. That's all they hear, and they just parrot it. And if you deviate from that, you're ostracized from the community. You are no longer part of the cool group.
Yeah, but I mean, I look at it. Look, I was there for 18 years, and I was in it. Like, dude, Jews run the fucking town there. Jews and gays run Hollywood. And I was surprised to see a lot of celebrities being like, "Oh, there's to stop the Palestinian genocide and everything else." If you were trying to be on the cool side of it, one would think you would have gone with the Israel side.
I'll tell you a dirty little secret about Jews.
Okay.
Okay. Jews, for the most part, don't give a crap about Israel.
Yeah.
So there are studies done every year about the top 10 issues that Jews care about across the country. Israel has not been the top 10 for many, many years. They don't care.
No shit.
That's right. And look, and Jews are also, we are unfortunately, we lean left versus right. And that's, you know, without boring you guys to tears, but why that is, but Israel, Jews have always looked at the prism of politics through the prism of social justice because of our history, which makes sense, right? And so Jews were all Republicans after the Civil War because they saw the Republican Party as the party of social justice. And they voted reliably Republican for generations. And that switched like a flip after Roosevelt. And after Roosevelt, they then looked at the Democratic Party as the party of social justice, and they have ever since voted Democrat in the tune of 70 to 80%.
That's got
to
be a tough sell, the mid-30s through the 70s, where the Dixiecrats kind of ruled the Democratic Party, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, that's I think they may have missed something there.
Yeah.
With Jim Crow. Jim Crow didn't come from the right. Shit.
Yeah, it's crazy.
Although it kind of did. Rutherford B. Hayes was a Republican, right?
Yes. Yeah. Yes, he was.
He was.
Yeah.
Yeah. He's the one that ended Reconstruction in the South, thanks to the Associated Press and Western Union, who helped him overturn a duly elected election, but whatever.
Well, I got to be honest, far more damaging to the Black community was, I would argue, was less Jim Crow, as horrible that was, more than what happened basically with the in the 60s with President Johnson. I think his policies were probably more damaging.
You mean like the social welfare stuff that doesn't provide for any upward mobility whatsoever? Yeah.
Correct.
It's like a little pat on the head. That's what it is.
As offensive and as disgusting as evil Jim Crow was, and it was all of those things, ultimately, if you look at what was more destructive to Black society, Black families, and Black, and like you said, the lack of upward mobility, what's kept them down has been the social justice policies of Johnson and the Democrats post the 60s and going forward.
Then I would agree. But post World War II, the reason that all these HBCUs are getting so much attention now is just because of people looking for clout. But what a lot of people don't understand is all the Black people that fucking served in World War II and even in Korea, when they were finished with their service, they got the GI Bill for college just like everybody else. But those colleges could tell them to go fuck themselves because they were Black. So they had, if you weren't around a Black, historically Black college, university, you weren't going to college, right? So that's how the GI Bill essentially created the middle class in this country, right? The GI Bill and the labor stuff in the late 19th century, to some degree as well, but mostly the GI Bill and the VA backed home loan. So most middle class people make the majority of their wealth over the term of their life through their mortgage, through equity in their mortgage. Now it's a little probably maybe shifted some towards 401ks and shit like that, but primarily that's what it was. And we robbed an entire, two generations of Black people of the ability post Reconstruction to be able to join the middle class. And then fucking Johnson came along in his spare time from not starting fucked up wars in Vietnam, came along in his spare time. Was like, here's 40 more years of no upward mobility.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Congratulations. And now all of a sudden the left cares. Like, give me a fucking break, dude.
But I spent a lot of time on these issues, and they're important to me. And frankly, that's why one of the reasons why I was so proud to have been to address the National Urban League Conference. And I told them the reality. Like I didn't hold back, you know. And I talked about how if you want to break down with the most, in my view, and this is not beyond the Black community. It's global. The most corrosive human emotion that exists is victimhood.
Oh yeah.
And that when you feel like a victim, it's a wonderful feeling to feel like a victim, because then all my problems are your problem, not my problem. That I can't fix it. You have to fix it. So I don't do anything. It's a wonderful feeling. It's like a beautiful warm blanket around you, but there's nothing more destructive to an individual, nothing more destructive to a group of people, and nothing more destructive to society than when you feel like a victim. Even if you are a victim, right? You can argue all day long. I understand why Black people can say we have been victims historically. That is absolutely true. But when you decide that the answers to my problems are not my decisions, the answer to my problems are your decisions, that's when you're fucked. And once they, and you know, and on top of that, it's a lack of folks in education, a lack of folks kind of two parent households. Those are the golden ticket. The solutions are not that complicated. They really aren't. And they're definitely not a transfer of wealth, because wealth is fleeting. Money is fleeting.
Right.
Give somebody a few thousand dollars a month, it means nothing in the scheme of things in their life. It truly doesn't. But to focus on those two really important things, education and two parent households, and then not to feel like a victim, that's it. Those are the answers. And it's funny, if you look at, and they say, oh, it's institutional racism, which keeps Black people down. Well, you know what? You throw that argument away when you just look at the statistic of Africans who immigrate to America. They're the most among the most successful class of people in this country.
Yeah.
Because they don't have the baggage that other Black people have. They don't look at this country as race. They look at it as a land of opportunity, and they take advantage of it. And that's why their household income is among the highest in the country.
Right. Yeah. So Michael Eric Dyson's not really helping the black community very much, nor is Al Sharpton or Jesse Jackson, any of those assholes. You know who does? As much as I dislike him because of his involvement in the beginnings of the Iraq War and shit, Colin Powell has a good excerpt from his autobiography about it's actually a story where he's at Fort Benning and he goes to a Wendy's or something right off post and they won't serve him even though he's in uniform because he was black or some shit like that. And it wasn't that long ago. It wasn't like during segregation or anything like It was just like the South. But yeah, I agree with you 100%. That victimhood shit just doesn't work. It's not about, I used to tell people this all the time when I worked in politics, especially on social justice stuff. Like, I'm not going to tell you when, where, and how to protest or how to feel about shit, but I can tell you that you're not going to win like this. This is a cultural insurgency, and the first thing you have to do in an insurgency is gain patronage. And that means whoever is running the show, you need to fucking have them like you. And standing in the street blocking traffic is not going to accomplish that goal. Like, you can do whatever you want. You're entitled to it. You've been fucked over. Great. But do you want to win or not?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And then with the welfare bullshit, the phrase, give a man a fish and you'll feed him for a day, it's in Matthew chapter 4, I think. So it's existed for about 2,000 years. This isn't new, right? Mm-hmm. This is the idea that you have to fucking give people the ability to create for themselves, create their own life, is not new. It's new in government. Like, America is the first country that ever has that written down in their constitution. Life, liberty, pursuit of happiness. And the idea is individual liberty and entrepreneurship are the ultimate inoculation against tyrannical bullshit, right? That's the whole point of all this stuff. And for some reason, the left's position is that black people can't figure out how to get an attorney. They can't figure out how to do anything, apparently.
Yeah.
Like, they can't get an ID to vote.
Yep.
Like, it's just impossible.
Yep.
And it's the most demeaning shit I've ever heard in my goddamn life.
It's just, it's blocking and tackling. It's basic shit. I mean, it's funny you mentioned voter ID. So my most popular video, which is, I think it probably at 40, 50 million views at this point across all the platforms, was a voter ID video where, so a lot of the videos that I do kind of exposes the bigotry of the left when it comes to black people. And that particular video was me going to leftists in Berkeley and asking them, do you like voter ID laws? Do you not like voter ID laws? And of course, I know we hate them. Why do you hate them? Because they are racist. Why are they racist? Well, you know, black people don't have ID. Black people can't find the DMV. Black people can get on the internet. Like, this is what they were telling me on camera.
Yeah.
And then I go to, you know, Harlem. I'm like, do you guys have ID? Or they're like, what the fuck are you talking about? I'm like, do you know how to get the internet? They're like, well, I use my phone as a hotspot. Or, you know, I mean, they're dumbfounded by these questions. I'm like, because this is what the left thinks of you. They think so poorly of you that the state, it's all about the state. The state has to take care of the individual. And the state has to take care of black people because black people can't do on their own. They need the state. We need the state. And that's what it comes down to. It all comes down to power. They want to control power. They want to use power. And it's a great wedge for them to say,
oh yeah,
we have to take care of black people because you can't do it. So we, the state, who know best, we'll do it for you.
Yeah, and the state's been pretty good to black people over the years. From what I'm not a historian or anything, but they've been pretty good. And I think that's why you're seeing I wouldn't even call it an open border policy. It's just chaos, right? And you saw the left has tipped its hand. What was it, 2 or 3 weeks ago? They tried to, in this crazy ass infrastructure bill, whatever the fuck they want to call it, they tried to add a provision that would provide a very truncated pathway to citizenship for all these illegal immigrants that are coming over right now.
Yeah.
Like 8.5 million people. They just wanted those votes. And I think it's because they see that they're losing the black vote. Like it's that margin is getting slimmer and slimmer.
But the immigrants coming in are coming from countries where, you know, they were either involved in socialism or some form of horrific government. Even the Latino vote, I mean, Florida was the first state that was called, which is shocking because that never happens. The Latinos that had come over, they were like, fuck this. I don't want to live like I'm in the country that I just came from.
Yeah.
They're making a massive strategic miscalculation.
I agree.
With the Latino vote.
I agree.
We're already seeing the Latino vote start to move toward the Republicans. All you got to do is look at the stat on Trump. Trump, with all the stuff he said that, you know, demeaned, you know, Latinos, he got a third of the vote.
Yep.
A third the first time, and got more the second time. Now they're making a massive strategic mistake.
Yeah, and I don't know where it's going to end with these guys. I mean, we're seeing more and more authoritarianism, and it's I'm glad that more people are having conversations about it, because it is for years now it's been you're a fascist, you're a communist, right? And I don't think either one of those groups knew what either one of those words mean. And now it's kind of people are kind of going down the list of bullet points about what communism is or what fascism looks like and all this. I think there's still a severe misunderstanding, because what we're experiencing now is not like either one of those things. It's more like corporatism mixed with fascism, I guess, from like China. That's what's happening here. And I don't know if you see China is now like if you let your vaccine passport go out of date, they just come rip you out of your house and put you in quarantine and whatever the fuck else. I mean, it's wild as shit these days. And I remember I've been reading some of the statements from the Holocaust survivors. One was a Hungarian Jewish woman, and people kept asking. She goes, everybody always asks, how could you have let this happen? Why didn't you do something? And it's like, well, they didn't do it all at once. Yeah. They did a little bit here, and they're like, all right, that's just another fucking thing I've got to deal with now.
Right.
But I've got shit to do. I got to raise my kids and go to work and shit. And, you know, I think we have a moral obligation to, one, understand our history as a species and how all that works. But two, together figure out the earliest point that we can interdict bullshit like this so it doesn't turn into armed conflict.
Right.
You know what I mean? And we're failing at it right now, because half the country is pissed and wants to fucking secede or some shit. And the other half of the country is clapping as they're getting mandated to do shit.
Yeah.
Like, that's not fucking cool.
No, I don't know who we are. And I don't necessarily know that the Democratic Party knows who it is. I was watching Saturday Night Live, which had their season opener. Traditionally, that's a big deal. Hey, everybody, it was the worst rated of all time.
SNL is basically like a media wing for the DNC now, right?
Yes, but here's what's odd. So they always lead off with a political sketch. I don't know if you saw this on Saturday night. The political sketch was because they actually hired a new cast member to come in and be Biden. Whoever it was actually did a really good job. But the entire 8-minute open was about how the Democratic Party was fractured and they could not come together on this infrastructure bill, which you were talking about earlier. And it was interesting to see where it was just like, wait a minute, is Hollywood and the media finally starting to pick up on this? Because they had somebody playing AOC who was just like, I don't like anything that you just said. I don't want the Iron Dome. I don't want any of that. Mm. Somebody else on the other side, Manchin, was just like, look, I don't want the Amtrak thing or whatever. And then there was another Democrat who was just like, well, I don't want any of it, and I don't really know why. Mm-hmm. And I think there is a fracture within that party of who they are. Whatever you want to say about the Republicans, racist or whatever the fuck you want to say, everybody's on the same side about things. I don't know what that party is really going forward, in particular after Biden, because I know, you know, the odds in Vegas are that he would win a re-election, but he would be 83 years old, 84 years old at that point. It'd be hard to imagine that he even makes it that long. Where do you think this all goes?
So I think the Democratic Party has an existential problem that the Republicans don't have. I think this battle we're seeing, first of all, this is not new, right? We've seen this kind of creeping up upon the Democratic Party for probably 10 years. They have a problem they are not going to be able to solve. The differences, there are differences among Republicans for sure. If you look at Romney on one side, right, Trump on the other side. But those are surface level issues, okay? What you're seeing in the Democratic Party are fundamental issues. Issues as to whether or not the U.S., this country itself, is a good or a bad. I'm talking about real fundamental issues that separate the two ideologies.
There's 20 to 30% of the left that is completely bought into the 1619, like, America is evil from inception bullshit.
Yes.
Correct.
Yes.
Correct. And that's not an issue. I do not like Nancy Pelosi, never have, never will. She ultimately believes the U.S. is a country that is a force for good. She truly does. Now, she and I may disagree fundamentally on how we get there, right? Mm-hmm. But we both want this country to be strong and successful. AOC and the rest of the squad do not believe that in their bones. They believe this country was born in sin and this country will have to die because of that sin. And this is the beginning of it. It is only this fracture among the Democrats is only going to get wider and more difficult and is going to crush their party.
See, and I would have said that as well, right? But then I had higher hopes for what was going on with Gavin Newsom in California, where, fuck, man, it was a blowout. It was an absolute blowout. And, you know, I've never seen people more happy or excited to not work, have their businesses shut down, and wear masks all fucking day long than Californians. It's crazy to me. You live there, and you got to see it. Were you surprised by any of those numbers? Because that's, to me, like, I'd said this on a previous show where I was like, you know, I think you'll get a pretty good idea of where it's headed with that one. Because I have friends who were there, and I said this afterwards, I had friends who were there that were this close for their companies going bankrupt, but yet they still came in and voted for Gavin Newsom, and they were like, no, we believe in this, and this is the way.
I think a lot of people voted against the idea of a recall in the first place. That's what we experienced in Wisconsin in 2012, but... Yeah, I mean,
nobody's brought that up. That's an interesting point. Nobody's brought that up.
Also, dog shit candidates.
Yeah, yeah, big time. Yeah,
yeah.
I mean, nobody knew who Larry Elder was. Are we gonna? He's when people are referring to him as the Black Trump. I don't think they necessarily meant he espoused the MAGA ideology. I just think they mean this is a guy that's kind of an entertainer that's been around for a while. Now he wants to run for political office. Do we want to go through that again? Probably not, right? I think people hated Trump in California more than they disliked Elder, and certainly more than they like Newsom. So if you're in college, you have to understand who you are. Reagan was not anything like Trump. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Despite how Nancy contributed to the anti-gay shit and the fucking drug nonsense, that all that stupid shit, for the most part in California, he's a member of SAG, dude. He wasn't exactly like anti-immigrant and all this other bullshit that people thought about for Republicans back then. He was different. You have to understand where you are. I don't think a Republican like that could ever win in California.
Yeah, I'm curious because you're still there. Mm-hmm. What is your answer to it? Because the way I viewed it was, oh, shit, I don't know. We could be in trouble because people are just locked into their beliefs and that is it.
So, all right, so just for clarity, I live in New York, but I'm in L.A. now and I grew up here and I spent a lot of time here. So, but I do understand the politics pretty well. And I actually still vote here.
Yeah, yeah.
So I did vote for the recall of Gavin Newsom. And I voted for Larry Elder. Okay. But what the dynamics were fascinating. First of all, Gavin Newsom is not well liked at all in the state. He is known as, first of all, being personally a piece of shit and being a not particularly effective governor. They further disliked him because of his hypocrisy. Him going to the laundry, right? Yeah. One of the fanciest restaurants in the world, while he's trying to shut down the place. So hypocrisy never plays well in general with people, even for both left and right. The problem was that people came to realize people who were supporting the recall, I mean, Democrats, came to realize very quickly that because of the way the recall laws work, you could have a minority candidate, I don't mean minority by skin color, but minority based on the number of votes, become governor because of the way it's set up. Because you vote for the recall in one tick, and then you vote among 50 other people with a second tick, separately from each other. And they came to realize that Larry Elder, who I happen to like very much, both on a personal and a public level, was actually had a shot at replacing Newsom. And that's where you saw the people who were supporting Gavin, well, more importantly, people who were quiet about it, right? The people who were vocally against, we call him Gavin Newsom, stayed vocally against him. But more importantly, Silicon Valley and their money were quiet on it. And what happened very quickly when they came to realize that Larry Elder will probably be the replacement, mobilized their money and their power and in support of Gavin Newsom, which they weren't doing prior to that. That's what tipped the scales.
For sure. I'm sure Soros spending $1 million on that didn't hurt his campaign either, right?
Yeah, but I think, shit, man, that campaign soared into the millions at that point. And with a blowout that large, as much as I would love to blame it on Soros, $1 million is 65-35, I believe, is the final percentage.
It would have cost $3 million just to get enough, just from the right side to start the the recall in the first place. I think about $3 million to get, because you need.
Oh, to move the needle in California. No, you're talking in the 50 to 100 million range.
Yeah. Just to get the recall started, just the portion of it that gets the signatures to begin the campaign would cost somewhere in the 3 to 5 million range.
Uh-huh.
Because we did that math back in the day when I was out there. But I totally agree with you. I think that is a very confusing way to run a recall campaign or in a recall election. Why would you do both at the same time? I understand saving the taxpayers money, but that's kind of bizarre. And a lot of people aren't going to, especially to your point about a minority voter, or I'm sorry, a minority vote. Somebody can get 30% of the vote and become governor. This dude's going to, he's up for reelection in what, a year and a half now, or less than a year and a half?
Yes. So, yeah. Shit. You're looking at probably, I think, next fall, right?
Yeah. Next November. So about a year and a month from now, he's up for reelection. I don't think people are willing to do that, honestly. Gray Davis hadn't even been in office that long, right? When he got recalled.
He was the only one, I think, what was that, 2003 that he got recalled. But yeah. What do you see happening with him next year then?
Newsom?
Mm-hmm.
I think it's primary.
Probably, yeah. They got to replace him now. He was the golden boy behind Kamala, but he's not going to make it out of there. I mean, governors have a pretty good shot at being president, but honestly, I would have said that, but Canada with Trudeau, I know he called that election at a time that was beneficial for him specifically, but still, that wasn't a narrow win, and this is a guy that has fucked his country up pretty badly, kept a lot of people under lock and key, and he's, you know, done blackface a couple of times.
Yeah.
So I'm not sure if people have quite the appetite for hypocrisy, provided they are coached enough that the other side is more evil. That's the problem with fundamentalism. You can, if you believe that your opponent is intrinsically evil, you can't allow them to succeed no matter what. So you'll cheat. You'll do whatever you got to do. Right? That's how it works.
Yeah, and layer in the fact that both California voters and Canadian voters are sheeple.
That doesn't
help at all. These people are not they're cowards. They're not brave. They don't have courage. They don't have the ability to stand up for what makes sense. And the, unfortunately, one among the many terrible things that has shown me about this country after the pandemic was that we'll just go along, man.
Mm.
We will just fucking go along, even if it doesn't make any sense.
Well, if you turn this moralistic nonsense into social currency, like, for example, the word anti-Semitic has been overused over the years. It is very accurate in a lot of ways, and I agree with you. I think the squad, the entire one, actually, I don't know if AOC knows enough to be actually anti-Semitic, but the other three, certainly. But we've assigned all this social currency, this value to being on the quote unquote right side of history. How often do you hear that phrase, be on the right side of history? And if you can convince people in your campaign, fucking your programming enough that the other side is on the wrong side of history, it doesn't really matter what you think or believe.
If you're virtuous and you're righteous, there's no limit to what you'll do to the other side because you are the virtuous one.
Right. That is the real problem with fundamentalism, and we're seeing it now. I mean, it's like this. I don't know what you would call it. This social justice blindness almost has become the religion of the left. But I don't think the religion is it's only for the people. The people at the top certainly don't believe any of this shit.
No,
like there's no way they do. Otherwise, they would be conducting themselves quite a bit differently.
Yeah.
Here's a good analog.
I think
you
just described religion.
Yeah, no, it's the opiate of the masses, right? Like the people that run the religions never believe any of that bullshit. They just use it. I mean,
and they'll tell you too behind the scenes.
Yeah,
if you're friendly with them.
Yeah, it's just the means of control. It's like the fucking Matrix. So, just because there's no God involved doesn't mean it's not a religion.
Yeah,
I'll say that about the lefties these days. They seem to have abandoned all reason. Like it doesn't matter if something's even USA Today, they're fact checking. They're like the primary fact checker right now in social media. If you see something that says fact checked at the bottom of it, it's almost always them.
USA Today or AP, you know, they'll go with the AP.
It is fucking crazy. The stuff that they're jokes, like memes, like this isn't true. And then stuff that is demonstrably true, they will say it's untrue.
Yeah.
And they'll, but they say missing context. What?
Yeah. Oh, I've experienced that firsthand.
Oh, I'm sure.
Numerous times.
Missing context. That's where they fucking add their spin to the facts.
Yeah.
And like, well, I mean, if you move the decimal point over here, then technically it's not true. No, that's not how math works, bitch. You can't just do that. Jesus fucking Christ.
You know, we began this thing with Wikipedia, and maybe we can end with Wikipedia. Wikipedia is one of the things we don't speak about enough. It is the danger Wikipedia. I mean, that is the new foundation, the new fount of knowledge, the foundation of knowledge, right? It's the new Library of Alexandria. I mean, this is where we get our information from. I mean, this is where I get my information from when I'm in a pinch, right? It's a real problem. Completely has an ideology, of the left. And they treat anybody on the right as an enemy, and they will allow anybody to change and lie about somebody on the right, while they will totally anybody on the left, they will very viciously protect that person's reputation.
Oh yeah, like how did Cuomo stay in office for so long? I think here's my theory on that. So you're a New Yorker now. I think that Cuomo's absolute failure on the COVID bullshit. They knew they couldn't let him go down for that, because that means the whole fucking ship goes down. Now everybody knows you're full of shit. Because our first major, a guy that was, people were talking about for president back in August of last year, if you recall that.
Oh, yeah.
Like replacing Biden on the ticket and shit. You can't let him go down for that, right? Because then the enemy sunk my battleship.
Uh-huh.
But you can take him down for sexual assault. That's a hot button topic, right? So you just find as many women as you can, get a pay lawyer to go find a bunch of people to make a complaint. To your point about the obfuscation of the truth and shit, we're all aware, like, it, you keep hearing this shit that the vaccine's FDA approved now. Well, a vaccine is FDA approved, right? The Pfizer one that's not available in the United States is approved. None of the ones that are being administered in the United States is approved. They're still on emergency use authorizations. That's not a fucking political opinion. That's a fact. But if you type that shit, it'll say, I guarantee you, if you just type those words on Instagram, you'll get a little message at the bottom that says missing context.
Yeah.
Look, no, it's not missing context. Sorry.
Yeah.
Like, there is an FDA approved vaccine, technically. Yeah, but not here.
Yeah,
exactly. Motherfucker. Why is it not okay to say that? I don't get it.
I don't either. And Wikipedia, like, I have one. I don't know how or why. You can't change anything on it. It just looks like it's oddly slapped together. I don't take much stock in it. But the problem is what you were saying, everybody else does. And then, you know, like, net worth is also another one that's come up a lot.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Where it's like,
I'm worth a lot. My wife is like, where are you hiding this fucking money?
Mine's super low. And like, it's, what does mine say? We'll type it in here.
Mine's like $15 million.
Oh, man, that's a good one. Mine's $600,000. You can't even get a one bedroom here in Austin, Texas for that.
Yeah.
I'm only getting $1.1 million for you, bro.
Me?
No, for Ami.
Ami, well, we got $1.1 for you, Ami.
Yeah, you gotta look at some other one. I gotta look at another one.
Yeah, did you lose 14 mil here in the last few days, maybe
since I got on this podcast.
Yeah. Probably. Last question for you here, since, you know, we were talking about Israel a lot today. Is there going to be any resolution between Israel and Palestine?
Sure. Yeah, I think so. I mean, look, if you would have said to me 2 years ago, would Israel have had peace with the UAE and essentially Saudi Arabia, I would have said, you're crazy. But that was done. Right. That was done by the Abraham Accords with President Trump. So, no, I do believe that there is a solution. I think ultimately, sometimes the way human nature works is you have to expend a lot of energy and a lot of money and ultimately a lot of death to get to what you knew was the answer earlier. But that's just the way human natures are. As we are as people, is how we're kind of hardwired. And we will eventually reach the solution we all know, which will be equitable.
Okay. Okay. Now's the point in the show. We get to the drinking bro of the week, which is someone who has inspired you or helped you become the person you are today. Ami, who would you like to give the drinking bro of the week to?
Huh. Somebody who inspired me and who made me what I am today. God. Wish I had a heads up on this one.
Well, that is the show. You know, that's your fault. I'm totally fucking with you.
That is my fault. That is my fault. I have to see my parents.
There you go.
That's probably the most common answer.
It is. We've done over 1,000 shows on here. Your parents is one of the most common, unless you had a fucked up childhood.
They're the ones who, well, I think either way, parents would still be the most common one, right? Even if you have a fucked up childhood, you're a fucked up dude, a lot of dude, your parents stop grieving, you know?
Yeah, for sure. For sure. Where can everybody find you at on social media and all your projects and all that other stuff right now?
You know, just put an Ami horse on the internet and all that shit comes up. You got go to ami.locals.com if you want to help, you know, help me with the videos that I make and or don't.
That's awesome. I like how just chill you are, nonchalant. You're just like, yeah, man. Help or not help, I don't really give a shit. And, you know, it's just nice to have a conversation today.
I just hope both teams have a good time.
That's all. That's all it is. Ami, thank you for joining us today. It's been super fascinating. I don't know that much about Israel and Palestine and all that other shit. And it's nice to hear it from somebody who does. Because I'm not going to speculate and be like one of these asshole celebrities who's like, no, I'm choosing a side because somebody thinks I should. I'm not going to do that. So I appreciate it. For Ami Horovitz, D'Anthony Holloway, I'm Ross Patterson. This is the Drinking Bros Podcast. Good night, everyone.
Looking for something new? Try fencing, the Olympic and Paralympic sport that mixes speed, strategy, and fun. It's like chess meets cardio. Quick feet, quick decisions, and a satisfying beep when you score a point. Kids, teens, and adults can start anytime. No experience needed, and many clubs have loaner gear. Coaches teach fundamentals and safety from day one. Find a beginner class near you at usafencing.org/tryfencing. That's usafencing.org/tryfencing.